We believe in unlimiting every potential, making the impossible possible. It's our passion, determination, and our purpose. Like how we pioneered unlimited streaming and unlimited data plans. U-Mobile, where your unlimited potential begins.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
Today on the Breakfast Grill, I'm talking to Mark Odell, the Chief Executive of the Life Insurance Association of Malaysia, LIAM, and Anthony Lee, the Chairman of the General Insurance Association of Malaysia, PM. Now, gentlemen, let's start with COVID and the role of the insurance industry. Now, the base case is that generally pandemic-related risks are not covered under any plans worldwide, and this exclusion stems from the difficulty in pricing relating to a pandemic that may occur just once in a lifetime. The industry says such events have an incalculable impact and cost, and with COVID being a pandemic, it's not insured under any benefits in Malaysia. But people like Bill Gates have rightly pointed out that viruses are a reality for everybody in this day and age. So shouldn't the industry therefore step up and assume its rightful role in protecting society? Anthony, maybe let's start with you.
Sure, thanks, John. You know, insurers are always there, right, for many different reasons. But you've got to understand the basis of insurance. You know, it's based on a calculation, the ability to calculate a risk properly, and also, you know, to be able to have the solvency to pay where there is a claim. So there's obviously a long history, and we work based on data that we have. You know, as a result, the SARS pandemic several years back, I think that's where, in this part of the world, certainly, pandemic became an exclusion, simply because of lessons learned from that pandemic. So as a result, you know, for quite the right reasons, that has always been left out. And this, as you can see now, is a you know, I've seen figures that this has cost the world about $4.5 trillion, and roughly of which only 1% is actually covered by insurance. So there is some insurance, but for a lot of reasons, that's the issue. Now what we need to do, there are big groups. One is the Geneva Association, which is an international association for the study of insurance economics. And they are proposing, you know, it needs to be a private-public partnership. So we do need government to work hand-in-hand with insurers to, you know, work out how we deal with, you know, future pandemics. And then there are discussions ongoing. But as you can imagine, the size and scale of this thing is absolutely enormous. And we need to really sit down and look at what are the different layers which we can, you know, insurers can participate and take on part of the risk. But, you know, when you're talking about trillions of dollars, at the end of the day, you know, governments are going to have to be the backstop to all of this simply because of the economics involved.
Yeah, maybe, Chuang, if I could just add to Anthony's comments just a little bit about the exclusions, right? Because I think I'd be remiss if I didn't say to your audience that there are a couple of players in the industry that do cover COVID in Malaysia, but that's not the norm, right? And as Anthony said, the exclusions came about really after SARS and H1N1. And for good reason, because if you look at an individual risk, right, and an individual uncertainty, insurers can play a role if they can manage the macro level, you know, and they understand the risk, right? So when you get to COVID, for instance, you have a problem that COVID is neither manageable at the macro level nor is well understood in terms of the risk, right? So it's understandable why most insurers would not be so keen to undertake that risk, because, you know, you could get a very large, and you have seen, right, a very large percentage of the population fall ill, and that creates a big problem, right?
So it becomes problematic because the insurance industry has positioned itself, at least where its ANP is concerned, as the society's protector of society. But now that with a problem of such gigantic proportions that COVID is, it seems to be now bolting for the door, or at least not accepting part of its obligation, if you like, to protect the people. That does become problematic.
Yeah, Chuang, if I can step in, I think you know, the perception that you know, we're there to solve all the problems of the world, I think it's a little bit, you've got to be a bit careful there. Now, we have done a lot of things out of the way, right? So we came out with 10 million ringgit for a COVID test fund. That's literally digging into our pockets and coming up with that money. A lot of insurers did a lot of work in, you know, payment deferments, you know, a lot. I think that, Mark, you have the figure, right? It's quite a big sum of money if you put it all together. So we have certainly stepped up, and people would have noticed that. But, you know, at the end of the day, we need to obviously sit down together and say, how do we actually work this out? Because also hospitals have to, you know, private hospitals have to step in and say, you know, you can't charge what you normally charge, you know, where you've got returns to make and make profits, because all the funds will be exhausted extremely quickly. So it's got to be a whole different way of operating. And we're certainly happy to step in there and work together with government and private hospitals together to come up with a solution.
Is it right then for Dr. Kuljit Singh, the president of Private Hospitals Malaysia, to suggest that the government use the emergency to enact new laws to allow the government to direct private hospitals to take in COVID-19 patients and give the public healthcare facilities some breathing space?
Yeah, look, like I said,
I was just going to say, I think it's a bit extreme. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, it forces the issue onto the private sector, you know, unnecessarily, really. I mean, I don't think, like I said, like Anthony has said, that the private sector, this time, in this case being insurers, you know, have an obligation to take on every, you know, form of crisis and disaster that the country faces, even though this is health related, right? And we try to be there for our insurers under normal circumstances.
Yeah, and Chuang, you mustn't forget, we are also on the hook for everything else, right? So on the medical side, you know, cancer patients, all the rest of it are on the hook for. We are on the hook for, you know, natural disasters, fires, explosions, and, you know, these things do come up to significant amounts of money every year as an industry. So, you know, our what we have in the bank to be able to pay for all these stuff is very carefully managed. So like everything, we're prepared to take on more risks, but it will cost a lot more. And I know that in the past, so not just for Malaysia, people have looked at pandemic insurance and they have rolled these out, I'm told, in different countries. Because of the price, it was too expensive that it actually didn't work. So that's where there is a significant issue, right?
Well, yes, gentlemen, and that's why the exogenousness of the situation has compelled calls, for example, from various parts of society, for example, to have a bit of a Robin Hood effect, for example, by imposing a super tax on rubber glove manufacturers who have profited tremendously from the pandemic. And that's also part of the reason why, I guess, from society, that FOMCA, the Federation of Malaysian Consumers Association, the president there, Dr. Marimutu Nadesan, has called on Bank Negara to compel insurance companies to cover COVID treatment for policyholders.
We have to be sustainable, right, as an industry, right? And we've been around for many years for that reason. And there are years where, as an industry, we lose money. And of course, there are years where we do make money. So this is a long-term issue. Right? For example, asbestos claims, these things go on for years and years and years, right? So it's not like you can just, you know, put this thing in one little wrap and just say, okay, for this period of time, take this on, right? So we are there, like I said, and we've come up with simple COVID covers that are actually very affordable. They have, of course, limited payouts, but they're better than nothing, and they're quite good value, and these are already in the market. And so insurance companies are coming up with things, and this will continue to evolve. And as the market liberalizes, like general insurance market is not totally liberal yet, liberalized, so that it needs to get to that point where so we can be more innovative. But, you know, like I said, we are working together, but I think people need to understand the industry isn't as simple as people might think it is, right? We have actuaries working on calculations. They go multiple years, many scenarios. You know, it's based on a multitude of risks that can happen at any time. You know, we do climate change is a big issue, causing weather patterns to change, raises the level of, you know, natural disasters that we cover. It's much more complex than someone trying to look at it with such a simple magnifying glass.
Yes, exactly, Anthony. But the problem is the pandemic has been with us for over a year at least. And we know that some of the most intelligent people in the world are actuarial scientists. Where do you think the biggest road bumps are in terms of getting it right from a pricing perspective?
I think what we're looking at is just look at Malaysia's situation, right? I mean, the key is vaccination, right? We all know now, looking at where everyone's going, that once you get enough people vaccinated, you get to a point where the economies can open up and run again. And you know, we've got all these issues. I mean, vaccines have been rolled out in record time. And you know, governments need to help push that. And the public need to step up and say, look, if I don't vaccinate myself, or, you know, live as a hermit in a cave, I'm going to be at risk of infecting everybody else, right? So human behavior is the key to this thing. And what we're looking at is, and different countries have responded very, very differently. So, you know, we will learn, and we are learning. And so the more data we have, the longer this goes on for, the more we're able to price something accurately. Because otherwise, if you ask us now, there are so many unvariables that we'll have to put in a significant price factor to cover that. So that's where this public partnership comes in, right? The idea is that insurers probably take the first layer of all losses, but ultimately, after a certain amount, then the government has to be the backstop, because we're talking about potentially, you know, amounts of money that are, you know, the solvability that we will all be insoluble, right? As insurance companies, we'll all go bankrupt, and this won't help anyone at all.
Yeah, no. So it really comes down to being able to manage the situation and understand the situation, right? And data is one thing, right? But when you get look at the numbers and the outcomes, right? It's not manageable, right? I mean, it is really scary in many ways, and it's just not something that insurance is really designed to cater for.
I'm talking this morning to Mark Odell, the Chief Executive of the Life Insurance Association of Malaysia, as well as Anthony Lee, the Chairman of the General Insurance Association of Malaysia, on the Breakfast Grill. We'll come back after this, gentlemen, and talk about the various types of coverage that both sides of the insurance industry are offering to policyholders and how we might be able to evolve or tweak that going further into the pandemic. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
I'm talking this morning to Mark Odell, the Chief Executive of the Life Insurance Association of Malaysia, LIAM, and Anthony Lee, the Chairman of the General Insurance Association of Malaysia, PM. Now, Mark, according to the LIAM website, there is some coverage. It's not as if the industry has totally ignored the situation. Some of the measures announced include reimbursements of medical bills for COVID patients, as much as 20,000 ringgit, post-COVID vaccination support up to 5,000 ringgit for hospitalization due to vaccine side effects, medical assistance up to 5,000 ringgit per claim, special death benefits of 7,500 ringgit, hospitalization income of 200 ringgit per day for 7 days, and 10,000 ringgit death benefit occurring within 30 days from vaccination. And there's also a special cash relief of 500 ringgit hospitalizations due to adverse effects from immunization within a week after receiving the vaccine. But according to the small print, there are some strings attached, some preconditions to be satisfied. What are some of them?
Strings attached, I'm not sure what you might be referring to, but I think the primary situation is that people have to get reimbursement for these expenses, right? So they have to apply and get reimbursement. Be obviously a policyholder.
So the issue then is the provability element, the connection to be drawn by the claimants in documentary form of the link between the illness or the malaise and the pandemic and COVID-19, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't characterize it as any strings attached, really. I mean, let me just talk about how this has evolved, right? So in the beginning, we know, or maybe even currently, we know that this is a condition required quarantine by law. And so the insurers' contracts generally exclude those conditions, right? And so what the insurers did a year ago is they inside the policy, they also have a lot of ancillary benefits like daily room and board or some other type of payouts, right? So given that the public hospitals were the required place for treatment, insurers moved voluntarily a year ago to waive the exclusion to free up additional benefits, right? And so in the course of that period of time, collectively, those additional benefits have reached nearly 20 million ringgit, actually, paid by insurers mostly in 2020, right? Into 2021, as you know, the last wave, you know, really put a lot of pressure on the public sector, and there were thoughts and calls and plans to refer patients to private hospitals, right? So then there became the call, as you know, or the dialogue, right, about where are the insurers when it comes into covering COVID patients in a private hospital. And as Anthony had said, our biggest concern was the cost of a private hospital versus the cost of care in a public hospital. There's a huge difference, right? And so we had engaged in long discussions with Bank Negara and MOH, and we stood ready to assist. And then, of course, the pressure resided, right? But nonetheless, many companies came out with their own COVID treatment fund, which you were referring to, right? Which you were referring to. So these are meant to cover their policyholders who may have to seek treatment in a private hospital. So there's no real conditions. It's just that these, you know, most of these funds either cover private hospital treatment or vaccine complications, right? So the only conditions really are the limitation of benefit, right? The limit of benefits payable for the degree of sickness they have, right? Because, you know, COVID is classified, you know, in different stages and different categories, right?
Well, the issue becomes problematic because when the caseload spills over from the public healthcare system into the private healthcare system, then the private healthcare system fee structure kicks into place. And I saw some various examples. I mean, for example, Adventist Hospital in Penang are requiring deposits of between 20,000 ringgit to 50,000 ringgit for any kind of illnesses that could even be related to COVID, even a suspicion of COVID. So we know that COVID does not discriminate between people of any kind of stature. And if, for example, someone who sells burgers by the side of the road were to be compelled through no inclination of his own to enter a private hospital, how can he be expected to pay 50,000 ringgit? So this calls into the question of whether the private healthcare system has more of a role to play in terms of rejigging the fee structure.
Well, I mean, to be frank, I mean, your example, the burger salesman side of the road is probably going to be treated in a public hospital, right? I mean, actually, we have been urging the Ministry of Health to come to agreement with the private sector on the cost of treating COVID patients, because otherwise it's really a big unknown, right? And there's a big disparity between the public costs and the private costs. And so this is where I think that all of us, as Anthony was alluding to, the public-private partnership, it's not just about public insurance partnership. It includes other key stakeholders in this regard that have to come to the table, right? Including private hospitals, because it's, you know, we're all in this together.
Anthony, when it comes to your side of the pond, not much on the PM website about COVID coverage, but there are some slides from a lawyer from Chuklin & Bock, the legal firm, discussing COVID-related coverage for businesses, which are, of course, an entity like individuals. Lots of legal terms in the slides, but the impression is that to qualify for coverage, the claimant must satisfy as well a lot of preconditions. What's the true picture there?
Yeah, so again, that area, so, you know, Malaysia, so fires is a tariff, and there's tariff wording on it, and that is pretty clear that, you know something damage not covered. You know, historically, in other markets, even where, you know, they've been very difficult to prove that a business, that COVID came into the business, or someone, let's say, added a restaurant, and they claim they got COVID from the restaurant and trying to sue. How can you prove that the person got it from the restaurant, right? So these things are incredibly complex to deal with. So you know, difficult to give that as a straightforward answer. I would say that overall coverage in a typical policy is going to be, you know, probably non-existent, if at all. But having said that, what we've come up with since the pandemic is covers, for example, you can get travel insurance where it covers, you get certain amounts of money paid up for you if you catch COVID. And policyholders are also coming out with simple accident policies where there is a COVID coverage as well if you happen to get admitted or, you know, you get loss of life or et cetera, et cetera. So that's you know, the market is trying to innovate. But prior to this, I would say, you know, this is unprecedented. So typically, it was not something that people thought of and not something that, you know, even someone wanting to buy a policy would say, do I really need this, right? Unfortunately.
Well, that being said, I mean, the ferocity and the speed at which this virus is mutating does make the need to have a collective agreement on how to advance the insurance industry forward and to make it more urgent, gentlemen. Now, obviously, in the remaining 3 or 4 minutes that we've got left, what is your sense of at what point in time can we see some kind of wholesome and material solution to basically coverage of this kind?
Yes, I think, you know, there is already, in fact, we're not just doing COVID, it's in fact pandemic related, right? Mm-hmm. So infectious disease cover definitely is now much more prominent. You're going to see many more insurers coming out with products that cover. I mean, there'll obviously be, we have to work out what's the affordable premium that people can pay and how much can coverage can we give them for that amount of money. Like I said, you know, if you wanted to do an unlimited thing that would cover everything from A to Z, it would be really quite unaffordable. And that's not really the purpose, right? The purpose is to give peace of mind to everybody. And I think the combination, as people get vaccinated, this risk is going to come down. So that will make it easier for us to address this, which I think is a positive. So it's kind of chicken and egg, but the most important thing is that we've got to get people vaccinated as fast as possible and reduce the risk so that, you know, insurance can be, you know, something that lasts for the longer term and makes more sense. I mean, for COVID itself, I mean, once we get towards herd immunity, I think that's going to be much easier to deal with because we know there are going to be variants, right? This thing's going to continue. It's not going to disappear simply because so many other parts of the world are going to be much slower at getting vaccinated. And so this risk is going to be around for a couple of years, for sure. And you can see even countries that have hardly any cases, suddenly they blow up and they have to lock themselves down, right? Singapore is an example. Yeah. Taiwan is another example. So it's not over yet.
Yeah, that's right. And even now, as we speak, Melbourne has entered its fourth round of lockdowns for another 7 days. So it falls upon you, Mark, to have the last word. What do you say?
To me, I don't have all the answers at this point in time, but I think that as we discussed, a public-private partnership, including many stakeholders, need to come together to figure out who can play what role going forward, right? Because otherwise, it's not commercially viable for the private sector to undertake 100%, right, of the risk. It's not commercially viable for the insurer or for the individual premium payer. So how it might look like, I think it's difficult to say, but I think the first step is we get people around the table and discuss about not just COVID, but about future pandemics and how we all can play our part.
Well, we do need a solution and we do need it pronto. So what is your sense of when we might get a solution in front of us, front and center?
Good question.
Wholesome is a big word. If the Geneva Association has been talking about this for quite a while and they're still struggling to come up with solutions. So I think, look, if we're pragmatic and we look at smaller ticket items to deal with, that's faster to get something up and running, yeah. Right? Overall, you know, be all end all solution. I mean, this is really asking a lot. We're willing to sit down and table and talk, but let's be clever about how we tackle the issue.
Not just that. I think to be fair, I mean, MOH is very busy with the current pandemic, right? I mean, you know, and so there hasn't really been you know, the room to actually, you know, carve out time to sit down and discuss about the next pandemic. So I think, you know, it's on the agenda and we'll pursue it as fastly as we can.
All right, gentlemen, thanks for your time. I do hope we will find some kind of resolution and some kind of solution earlier rather than later. I was talking to Mark O'Dell, the Chief Executive of the Life Insurance Association of Malaysia, LIAM, and Anthony Lee, the Chairman of the Persatuan Insurance Malaysia, or the General Insurance Association of Malaysia, PM, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.